Lovely. All right, did y'all have a chance to talk to your neighbors? Okay, lovely. All right, so I'm back. The last time I did the keynote was about 2 years ago, and if you remember, I had crutches and a knee brace, and I had just come out of knee surgery, and we got through it. Well, I'm going to tell you something. I may not have the crutches and the brace, but tonight may not be any better, y'all. It's been a rough week, and normally my style is not to talk off of notes and just not to be behind the podium, but I'm going to tell you right now, I'm going to own it. I'm going to be reading off my notes tonight, but I think that's okay. I'm seeing people here that may not know me. So my name is Lana Mock. I attend Kleinwood, and I sit generally on that side of the auditorium right behind the high school kids. I have a husband, Tim, and twins that are now 23, about to be 24, and I'm not that old. I can't be that old because really I'm just 32. That's how I feel. My connection here is that I have a brother named Derek who sits on that side with about 14 of his children. Okay, so y'all, everything sends a message, and when I look out here and I see how many women are filling the pews, that had rough weeks, tough days, you're tired. Some of us may be stay-at-home moms. I've been there and done that. And you're actually ready to be out of the house tonight, right? And you're already planning with your friends, like, we're going to go get some coffee afterwards, and you're going to milk this whole thing for what it's worth. I get you. I've been there. But it's been a rough day. It's been tiring. And so everything sends a message to me. And to see everyone sitting here tonight on a Wednesday night is very encouraging, not just to me, but to the other speakers that are going to be here in the morning, but it's also encouraging to each other. I really, really love the sisters that we have here, and even though sometimes it's hard for us sometimes to talk because we're on different sides, and by the time you get here, that person's out the door, but there's really a genuine bond, and that bond is because we all have a common faith. So just some housekeeping real quick. So I'm probably going to talk roughly an hour, so maybe we'll, you know, maybe around 8:30 we'll be done. We're not going to sing after that. We're going to have somebody say a prayer, and Jill's going to pick somebody. So if she hasn't picked anybody and she comes and taps you on the shoulder, that means you're the one that's up. You're in the batter's box. Don't worry. She's already picked someone. She just gave me the signal, so y'all can rest. Okay. So 8:30 we'll probably be finished, maybe a little bit before. It just depends. We'll say a prayer, and then we'll be out the door, and we'll be back again tomorrow. For those of you that may not know me, this has not changed about me. I am partially deaf, so I do have trouble hearing sometimes. And a lot of times what I've noticed when I'm training teachers, because I do large trainings for teachers, I can't hear a lot when people call out, and that's not my style. I like for people to answer out. So we may try that at the beginning, and if I can't hear very well, I may just shelve that. Because it gets really irritating for y'all if you say something and I go up to you and say it again, say it again, say it again. And so we'll just see how it goes with the hearing situation. The other thing, if you've ever been in one of my talks, is that I like audience participation, but I also like group participation. So there's going to be times tonight when I ask you to turn and talk to a neighbor or talk in your group, like a group of 3, 4, 5, whatever you feel. So right now, we're going to take care of that. So look around you. Either find a partner, find a group, whoever you're comfortable with, and make sure you've got your group form so you know who you're going to be talking to. You got it? And if someone walks in late, you're going to bring the stray into your group, right? So if they plop down, they look like they're by themselves, just bring them in. We're good on that? Okay, great. All right, well, this weekend, it's all about seeking God through the Psalms. And so, basically, it's about who God is, how he wants us to interact with him. And, you know, sometimes we think of God as this almighty creator who made us and then put us down into the world, and then he turns into this distant being. And that's not who God is at all. God wants more from us, and he wants more for us than that type of thinking. So we're going to look further this weekend into what God is, who God is, and the relationship he wants to have with us. Tonight, we're going to talk about how God is all-knowing, ever-present, all-powerful. And when we come back in the morning at 9 o'clock, We're going to talk about how he's faithful and forgiving. He tolerates our doubts. He's our refuge, and he makes and keeps his promises. So it's all about the character of God, but then what he wants from us in return. So when John Parsons came up to me and asked me to do this talk, I always know it's going to happen because John Parsons never walks to that side of the building unless he wants something. And so I stood up after church one Sunday, and I thought I was off the hook because, you know, I'm thinking, he would have asked me by now, so this is great. He's not going to need me. So he walks over there, and he makes a beeline for me, and I said, John, I already know what you're going to ask me, and the answer is no. And John Parsons, if I've told y'all this before, he has excellent wait time because all he does is I say no, and he just stares at me and doesn't say a word. And then there's that uncomfortable silence, and then you go, okay, John, I'll do it. And then I said, John, what is this about? And he said, we're going to study Psalms. And I said, no way, no how, because I'm going to admit something to y'all right now, and I probably shouldn't say it. Psalms is not my favorite book in the Bible. As I told him, I would rather read Leviticus than study Psalms. And I know, and some of y'all don't get that because you're like, Lana, how can you not like the Psalms? It's beautiful and it's flowing and it's wordy. That's not how I think. Y'all, I'm a former math teacher. I'm analytical. I like things in boxes and chunks. And so things that flow like rivers, I don't get it. So when he said it's about the Psalms, I said, absolutely no way. And John stared at me, and he was quiet. And I said, okay. But this is what I want to tell you I've learned. When you're reading the Psalms do have a rhythm to them. They have a pattern to them. And when I started thinking about it, when I'm in worship and we sing songs, or if I'm listening to songs in the car on the way to work, there's certain songs that can invoke emotions in me. We can sing songs here, and it just makes me happy and joyful. And I look around, and I see other people smiling and singing, and it makes them happy and joyful. But there's other times I can sing songs, and they just get to me, and I tear up. And y'all, the Psalms, the book of Psalms, all it is an ancient hymnal. That's all it is. And it's songs in that book that are just like the songs we sing today. It's just different words, but the meanings are the same. So once you look at it that way and you start really trying to uncover some of the patterns and the messages, you realize, you know what? There's some songs we sing today that would match that. So that's what I discovered. All right, so we're going to jump into Psalms 139. That's where we're going to be tonight. And I have to tell you, I'm going to admit it right now, I had never read Psalms 139 in my life. I had read Leviticus 12, but never Psalms 139. So Psalms 139 is when we're going to start. And if you look in your handouts, I also copied the Psalms for you. That way, if you want to mark them up, take notes, jot down thoughts, whatever you need to do, it's right here for you. So let's look at that real quick, and let's just talk about Psalms 139. First of all, it was written by David, who's described in both the Old Testament and the New Testament as a man after God's own heart. And in this psalm, David is praising God for his providence and his perfect knowledge of man. And when I look at it, this is where Glenda Shells is just going to, oh, Lana, what did you do? Because she's so good at flowy words. When I looked at that psalms, it chunked into three pieces for me, just naturally when I started looking at it. And so those are the three pieces that we're going to look at tonight. So the three chunks are this. First of all, God is all-knowing. Now, I'm just going to tell you this. Is there somebody in our lives that we can think of that we would say knows us better than anybody? Like if you were talking about them to somebody, you'd go, this person knows me, everything about me. Is there somebody like that in your life? It could be a husband, it could be a sister, it could be a best friend. What if I was to tell you that we secretly Bluetooth to auditorium, and I could point at anyone in here, and automatically we would turn that Bluetooth on, and every thought, word, or action you've ever done for your whole life would show up there on that PowerPoint screen. How comfortable would we be with that? I'm seeing some people like, mm-mm. Okay, this is our first chance to turn and talk in our groups. Why would we not be comfortable if every word, thought, or action we had ever had in our life showed up on the screen for all to see? Turn and talk to your neighbors. Why would we not be comfortable with that? Okay, so please pause the conversations. All right, why would we not be comfortable with this? Now, this is the point where I would usually have you share out, but I can already tell you I'm not going to hear you. I can already tell you. So I hate it, but I'm not going to have you share out right now. So that's why you're going to share with your partners. Okay, so some of us may have said, you know what, I got an image to protect. I don't want anybody seeing that. They might think bad of me. Some of us may say, you know what, I did some things in the past I'm a little ashamed of. I've changed now, but I'm a little bit nervous and ashamed of that. Some of us might make us a little bit insecure. I really don't want them because then it would open up all my deepest thoughts to people and it would just make me too vulnerable. I'm not comfortable with that. Some people might say, you know what, I got an ugly side that nobody needs to see but my husband. And even he don't need to see that at all times. And then some people might say, you know, it's embarrassing or I might lose a friendship. But y'all know where I'm going with this. Who is the one person that knows every word, thought, or action we've ever had for our entire life and has not left us? That's who God is. That's who God is. He knows everything about us. He could sit right next to us and watch the PowerPoint of our lives and not be fazed. Every word, every action, every thought we've ever had or will have, he already knows. He sees it all. And he hasn't left. So we can be totally vulnerable with God in a way that we can't be with anyone else. And that's a relief. That's a relief. Because think about this. He knows the mistakes that we're going to make before we ever make them. And he's willing to forgive us if we ask. That doesn't mean we can go hog wild, y'all, right? You know that. Doesn't mean you can just play loose and fast and go with it. That does not mean that. There's rules, there's laws, there's expectations, there's conditions of our heart that God requires. But he knows, and he knows that we can and will make mistakes. But he's okay with that, as long as we seek him. So here's the other comforting thing. I don't have to pretend around God. Do you ever feel that way sometimes when you're around a group of people and you just feel like, you know what, I kind of need to pretend a little bit. I need to be somebody that I'm not really not, maybe. We don't have to have that feeling with God. We can totally be ourselves. Because look, if we're not, he's going to know, right? So David took comfort in the fact that God knew him. David starts and ends the psalm with the word search. It was his plea to search him. He was totally open to growing with God's guidance and took comfort in the fact that God knew him intimately. So now we're going to do some more group work. When I took this psalm and chunked it up, God is all-knowing really came out in the first six verses. Now, it's scattered throughout, but really in the first six verses, it was very telling that God was all-knowing. So this is what we're going to do. We're going to turn and talk in our groups again, and this is what you can decide as a group. We need to read the first six verses. So you can read it on your own and then talk with your group about it, or you can pick somebody to read it to the group and then talk about it. But either way, this is what we're going to accomplish. We're going to read the first six verses, and then we're going to talk in our groups about what stood out to us. What phrases stood out that showed us that God is all-knowing? Maybe there's something else that stood out to you that you want to make note of. So now's your time to do it. So let's read verses 1 through 6 and then talk in our groups what stood out. All right, are we ready? We need a little bit more time? We're good? We're good? Okay, so we'll try to share out and I'll see how we do. All right, so what stood out? Is there any group that has something that they want to say, anything that stood out to them? And feel free to point to another group member so they can talk. It doesn't have to be you. Like if somebody in your group had something or something y'all found, giving y'all a chance. Giving y'all a chance.
We really liked the verse.
Thank you for talking up, Jen. I appreciate that.
You can always count on me to be loud. Search, understand, comprehend, acquainted, hedge, lay. Like there's just so many active verbs that go into him knowing. Like it's describing the fullness of how he knows.
And I appreciate that. I think a lot of times, and I circled those words too, the very same ones. I think a lot of times, y'all, and I'm going to say what I'm seeing from the new generation, even though high school girls, I love y'all. Y'all know that, right? You know I love you. Kayla, I need your help in second grade. Don't forget. Okay. Come back as my helper. But what I'm seeing is a lot of times people are not opening their Bibles anymore. It's on their phones, which is cool. But sometimes we're not marking up our Bibles. And when I think about that, I think about when I was in college and studying, when I really was studying, what was I doing? I was annotating in the books. I was putting sticky notes in it. I had color-coded all over the place. I have Bibles like that. I'm marking in them. They're falling apart. But when I'm watching some of the newer generation now, they're not marking in their Bibles. And I'm thinking they're missing some opportunities. Just like Jen said, she found these words. Like you just circle these words all the way down and they stand out to you because, again, you see a pattern. Anybody else see anything else? Anybody else notice anything? Glenda Shell's got her colored pins over there marking up the Psalms. Go ahead.
Just at the end where it talks about, I don't need that. Do you want me to use my teacher voice?
Yes.
Okay. At the last verse in verse 6, such knowledge is too wonderful for me that God's knowledge of me is so full, so complete, and I can never attain it. My knowledge of him, though I seek him, and all my life I seek him, I can never attain to the knowledge of him that he has for me, which tells me of his omniscience and his ability. I started off by asking her, have you ever thought about God with you in shadow? He doesn't care what I look like, because this is my song. He's looking inside, and that's what he's looking at. And I cannot attain that kind of knowledge.
Thank you for that. Anyone else? Robin? Is Robin loud enough? Okay.
One of the things that we talked about was the boundaries. There are none. It's lying down, rising up. I mean, sitting down, rising up. The path, comprehending the path, the knowing the things on the tongue before. Another version of the me say, hem me in before and behind. So there's no just what you're thinking right now. There's what you haven't even thought that you
Yeah, thank you for that. That brought up something that I marked. When you look in verse, I don't have my glasses on, y'all. Is it verse 2 that says, you know my sitting down, rising up? And then it says behind, before? Those are opposites, right? And what you're going to see in the next chunk we read is there's more opposites. Why would David use opposites in this psalm to demonstrate how God is all-knowing? So just think about this for a minute, because we use opposites in real life. In our Star Spangled Banner, it says, from sea to shining, what does that imply? Remember, it was written before Alaska and Hawaii were, right? So from sea to shining sea, the whole thing. When we say wedding vows, what do we say? In sickness or in, right? For richer, for poorer. What's the other one? I don't even know. I made them. Okay, so, but opposites imply what? The whole thing, completeness. So when David's using opposites throughout the Psalms, he's demonstrating the complete knowledge of God. All right. We talked a little bit in another group about in verse, is it 5, where it says you've hedged behind and before? Hedged? And what does that mean? Well, in some of the commentaries I was reading, it just meant, and it's a really comforting feeling, that our life is in God's hands. God holds us in his hands. And we sing a song that has that phrase in it. So God is all-knowing. Anything else we need to say about that before we close out that piece? Okay, remember I said we were chunking this bad boy? Here we go. Here's the next chunk. The next chunk is talking about how God is ever-present. Now, I have a story for you about that. My dad is former military. And so growing up, Derek and I grew up with a father who was very meticulous about his lawn. So meticulous, in fact, that when we mowed it, we had to mow and turn the corners on 90-degree angles. And not only that, but when you mowed it and went back to do the next strip, the tires had to be, you know what I'm talking about, Mom, the tires had to be right in the same lane so that your yard was perfectly mowed. Now, that aggravated Derek and I a little bit, but we did grow up with the understanding that if you're going to do something right, you do it once. Or you're going to do what? Do it over. And that just aggravated us. But we knew if we didn't do it right the first time, we were going to have to do it over. That was drilled in our heart. You don't take shortcuts. That was drilled in us. Well, we like to challenge that as teenagers. And I can remember one time my dad was out of town on a business trip, and it was my turn to mow the yard. And my dad, we didn't mow the yard once a week. We mowed it twice a week in the summers because he would get his ruler out if it wasn't mowed. So we would mow that yard twice a week during the summers. And I was out there one, it was in the middle of the week, and I was out there because I knew my dad was out of town, and I was mowing, and I was getting aggravated. And I decided, you know what, I'm going to show him I'm not going to turn a 90-degree angle. I'm going to put a little curve into that yard. And as I was doing the curves into the yard, who should drive up in the driveway but my dad, who was supposed to be out of town? And it was so aggravating because every time we turned around, our dad would catch us doing something. Every time. We wouldn't even do it on purpose sometimes. It would just be something that would make us look bad. And there was my dad catching us every time. And it was so annoying because you know what? My dad is still with me today. He's 80 years old, and he still does it. You know what I'm talking about. Okay. Bless you, mother, for living with him. Okay. So, no, I love my dad, but it is aggravating. But you know what, guys? Isn't it sad to think that there's people in this world that think that the omnipresence of God is overwhelming? That God is just scanning the earth, just waiting for you to mess up, and then he's going to whammy you? I mean, those are the people that leave the church because they just throw up their hands and they say, I'm not good enough, so why even try? That's sad. So the positive is that Derek and I, even though we were aggravated that our dad seemed to be there 100% of the time, we knew that our dad was there 100% of the time. And he was there to guide us, to comfort us, to correct us. And just be available to us. In 2 Chronicles 16:9, the eyes of the Lord run to and fro throughout the whole earth, to show himself strong on behalf of those whose heart is loyal to him. God surrounds us. He's ever present. And he's always willing and ready for us to reach out to him. We're never alone because God's always near. That's how we should look at the fact that God is ever present. That's not overwhelming. And that's not annoying. That's comforting. So in the next six verses, verses 7 through 12, again, with your partners in your groups, read 7 through 12, and then pick out the verses or the phrases or the words that would tell you, that would illustrate that God is ever present. What questions do we have? All right, go. Okay, how's it going? Are we about wrapping up? Do we need any more time? Okay, please pause the conversations. All right, here we go. So, what stood out to us when we read verses 7 through 12? Anything about how God is ever present? Anything stand out? Go ahead. Yeah, thank you for that. Anything else that stood out? Did anybody notice opposites again? What were some of the opposites we noticed? Heaven and? And then did you notice where it says wings of morning and then parts of the sea? Wings of morning indicate sky, deepest parts of the sea. See, if I'm a math teacher, I would have just said the sky and like the sea. But David makes it really pretty. Did you see the words lead me and hold me? Darkness and light, night and day. So remember, opposites indicate what? Completeness. Anything else stand out to anybody? Go ahead. Thank you. Anything else? I think y'all just about covered it. What interests me was down in, we talked about opposites. We talked about, it was in verses, when we're talking about if I take wings of the morning, that's verse 9, and dwell in the uttermost parts of the sea, talking about, that indicates there's nowhere to hide from God, not that we want to hide. Because this is his creation. You can't hide from him anyway. But he can reach out into the farthest distance of both sky and sea. So why would you try to hide from him? Then it's interesting to me, I found it interesting that it talks about darkness and light. Darkness and light don't mean anything to God because they're the same to him. So the darkness is not going to shield you from God. He created everything. So how can we hide from in his creation? So that's a little bit of a negative spin on it. The comforting spin is just like how that's being annoyed at my dad, right? But when you put the positive spin on it, it's just what y'all said. He is everywhere. That's comforting. There's nowhere I can be that God is not with me. I remember when I went to college, my freshman year, and I went to Abilene. Now, I was accepted to A&M, and I did end up in A&M because I got smart after that, but I went to Abilene Christian my first year of college, and it was 6.5 hours away from home, and you didn't have cell phones back then. And when I went to college, I didn't know anything except for maybe I had some cousins that were up there. But I didn't know my roommate, and I didn't know anybody that was living in the 4-story dorm. I didn't know anyone. And I got so homesick. And I would cry. You didn't know this. I can't look at you. I would cry almost every night because I was so lonely and so homesick. And then it finally dawned on me, I'm not alone. And so really that's kind of when my faith started becoming my own, was when I realized, you know what, it's up to me. It's up to me to learn about God. It's up to me to have conversations with God. It's up to me to lean on God when I feel alone. And it was comforting to know that even though I was in the little podunk town of Abilene, Texas, God knew exactly where I was. He knew exactly how I was feeling, and he was ready to comfort me. So that's a comforting feeling. All right, anything else about the verses 7 through 12 on God is ever present? Go ahead.
I don't have a good voice right now. Protection. I see that in all these 7 verses.
Thank you for that. Did it ever used to blow your mind? When I was little, I used to try to figure out, what do you mean there's no beginning? Like, I don't know why. I used to try to figure that out. How can there be no beginning? Like, no ending I think I could get, but no beginning? And that's God. Okay, so let's go to the third chunk, and the third chunk is this. God is all-powerful. So in our groups, instead of me telling a story, in our groups, just turn and talk to your neighbors. How do we know? Give examples in the Bible of when God was all powerful. Give some examples from the Bible. Where would it be demonstrated that God is all powerful? Have those conversations now. Okay, was that fairly easy to come up with a list just of different ways in the Bible that we see that God is all-powerful? So what are some, just talk out, what are some of the ways, just bullet them out, throw them out, what are some of the ways that we can demonstrate in the Bible that God is all-powerful? Say it again. Okay, yes. What else? Thank you. What else? Power over death. Thank you. What else? Yeah, thank you. What else? Right, thank you. We could just make list after list after list after list about how God is all-powerful. I'm actually teaching the second graders with Kayla on Sunday mornings, and we're studying Joshua. And we just studied the story of sending in the two spies, crossing the Jordan, the two spies go in, they go into Jericho, and they're at Rahab's house. And what's interesting and what we try to get across to the second graders, which Kayla, I don't know how well we did it. We're going to have to hit that one again. But what's interesting is that the Israelites hadn't crossed the Jordan yet. They had been walking around in the wilderness. But yet the people in Canaan were already afraid of God. And they hadn't even really seen the Israelites yet. So I'm going to read from, are my glasses on my head, y'all? Okay, good, because I need them. Okay, so I'm going to read from Joshua 2, and I'm going to start in verse 9. So I'm going to read Joshua 2. Actually, let's start in verse 8. So this is Rahab, and the spies are on her roof, and she's coming to talk to him. Now, before they lay down, she came up to them on the roof and said to the men, I know that the Lord has given you the land, that the terror of you has fallen on us, and that all the inhabitants of the land are faint-hearted because of you. For we have heard how the Lord dried up the water of the Red Sea for you when you came out of Egypt, and what you did to the two kings of the Amorites who were on the other side of the Jordan, Sihon and Og, who you utterly destroyed. And as soon as we heard these things, our hearts melted. Neither did there remain any more courage in anyone because of you, for the Lord your God, he is God in the heaven above and on earth beneath. So now to illustrate another way or another place where we read that God is powerful, it's not a place that I would normally have turned, and that's into another psalm. So this is what I'm going to ask you to do. I could ask you to turn to Psalm 68. But I'm going to read it, and I'm only going to read certain chunks. I'm going to skip around verses. So what I'm going to ask you to do is, while I read it, close your eyes. And I know that's uncomfortable for some people, but sometimes if we close our eyes, we're really able to concentrate on the words. So let me turn. Don't close your eyes yet, because I know people don't want to do that. They think everybody's looking at them when their eyes are closed. All right, so let me turn to Psalm 68. find my glasses. Okay, everyone close your eyes, and here we go. Let God arise, let his enemies be scattered. Let those also who hate him flee before him. As smoke is driven away, so drive them away. As wax melts before the fire, so let the wicked perish at the presence of God. O God, when you went out before your people, when you marched through the wilderness, the earth shook. The heavens also dropped rain at the presence of God. Sinai itself was moved at the presence of God, the God of Israel. The Lord gave the word. Great was the company of those who proclaimed it. Kings of armies flee. They flee. The chariots of God are 20,000, even thousands of thousands. The Lord is among them, as in Sinai, in the holy place. You have ascended on high. You have led captivity captive. You have received gifts among men, even from the rebellious, that the Lord God might dwell there. But God will wound the head of his enemies, the hairy scalp of the one who still goes on in his trespasses. The Lord said, I will bring back from Bashan, I will bring them back from the depths of the sea. Sing to God, you kingdoms of the earth. Oh, sing praises to the Lord, to him who rides on the heaven of heavens, which were of old. Indeed, he sends out his voice, a mighty voice. Ascribe the strength to God. His excellence is over Israel, and his strength is in the clouds. O God, you are more awesome than your holy places. The God of Israel is he who gives strength and power to his people. You can open your eyes now. There's so many passages that we could have read to describe the power of God, but we're going to go back to Psalms 139, and we're going to read verses 13 through 18. So for one last time this evening, I'm going to ask that you turn in your groups, read verses 13 through 18, and pick out words or phrases that would demonstrate the powerfulness of God. What questions do you have? Okay, go. looks like we're ready to wrap it up. Okay, so please pause the conversations. And for one last time, is it on? Okay, so for one last time tonight, let's share out what are some of the things that we picked out in that last passage about that would illustrate how the power of God. Anything? Go ahead. Thank you. I love that. Yes, ma'am.
That was leading out to the passage that out of all the millions and trillions of people in the world, there are no two moms alike. Everyone, God never ran out of looks, and everyone has their own unique fingerprint. I mean, everything is different.
Did y'all hear that? Did y'all hear? Okay, all right.
Was it on?
I don't know. I'm looking at it, the green light's on, and I had the mic up to you, and I couldn't hear very well, so. But y'all heard it? Okay, excellent. They didn't?
They heard it.
They heard it. Okay, great. Okay, anybody else? Thank you. Anybody else? No? Where? Lovely? Speak up, Katie. There you go. Thank you, Katie. That's beautiful. All right, yes.
I think it's the lesson I get out of it.
Can y'all hear Tiffany in the back? Tiffany, speak up, girl. We know you got it.
A lot of times the people around us can make us doubt who we are. And to just, when you get in that discouraged place, to just think on that verse of God made me. He made me who I am. We're all different, but God made us special in our own little way, and we should embrace that. And to just, there's so many times that I get discouraged because of other things that are going on around me, but when I really stop and think, God made me who I am. Mm-hmm. I am fearfully and wonderfully made. That's just a calming feeling.
And you're God's creation, so who are you to say that you don't appreciate what God made? No? I like that. Thank you. Anything else stood out to us about God being all-powerful? Go ahead, Jen.
At the end, it really strikes me that his knowledge of us should inspire us to want to know him. So it should be a snowballing effect.
Yeah.
The more we know how much he knows us, the more we should see him.
The more we, and like perfect segue into the conclusion, Jen. So the more we know about God's character, the more we learn about God, it just makes us want to learn more about him, and it makes us want to serve him. And like I said, we're going to come back, and we're going to learn more about characteristics of God, and we're going to be looking in the Psalms. So we're going to go ahead, and I'm looking at the clock, and we're going to conclude it for tonight. And there's a couple of things we're going to do before we do it. So I know every time it says, people say we're in conclusion. So many times we get lost in the thought that God is this distant, all-powerful, ever-present, all-knowing being that controls it all. And we're so insignificant in the big scheme of things. So we sang a song before we started called Before the Throne of God Above. And in that song, there's a verse that says, my name is graven on his hands. My name is written on his heart. Now think about that. God has whispered our names in his breath. Our names, your name. He knows our names. Each of us individually matters to God. Psalms 147 tells us that he knows the names of the stars. If he knows the names of the stars, He for sure knows the creation that he made closest to his heart. There's a lot of women in this congregation that have been through a lot of things this year. And it would be really easy to start doubting the presence, God is all-knowing, God is all-present, he cares for me, he's powerful, but yet all these things are happening to me, why? I mean, when I think of the names, I think of Cindy Osborne, I think of Melanie Russell, Cindy Maudere. And yet their faith was solid. And I did ask someone to stand and talk to us, if you don't mind, because we're going to go a little bit over, and I hope everybody's okay with that. But I wanted Kathleen Strode to talk to us, because I wanted Kathleen to answer two questions for me. Because I'm lucky in that I haven't been through major life-changing, altering events. I feel like my faith hasn't been tested yet. But when I look at the Strode family, their faith could have sorely been tested, but they stayed rock solid. So I asked Kathleen to share the answers to these two questions. How did you know this almighty, all-powerful God, who's this big being, and we're this one little person, how did you know that God cared for you individually, even though he seems at times to us, it can seem like he's distant? And my second question to her was, what has your experience taught you about God's personal relationship with you? So Kathleen, you don't have to stand and talk if you're not comfortable with that, or you can. What do you want to do? You feeling it, or you want me to give you the microphone? Yes, ma'am. Come on.
I'm terrified.
Do you want me to stand up here with you?
Yeah.
Okay, I'll stand up here.
My biggest fear is public speaking, literally.
Wait, I got to tell you something. Did y'all know that the biggest fear of all adults is public speaking? I mean, and think about this. They would rather be the one, like, I don't know. Anyway, 100% of adults' fear is public speaking, and you're fine. You ready?
Okay, the first question, I thought this was going to be tomorrow afternoon, so I'm not prepared. My notes are all over the place, so pardon me if I don't do this. So how did I know God individually cared for me? In January, we were talking about our blessings. We just had a new granddaughter, and we had three healthy grandsons, and we just felt so very blessed. Jerry had a brand new job. He loved it. And after the flu in February and what we thought was pneumonia starting in March, he goes to the ER. You know, we're thinking he'll be treated and released, only to see his health decline very quickly to the point that they thought he might die. They didn't know what was wrong with him, how to treat him. And it was really hard because we've been married 38 years and he's my best friend, and I felt if he died, I would crumble. I worried about my faith. It scared me. Would I be okay? And during this time, it made my prayers so much more intense. It literally put me on my knees, begging God for peace, for comfort, for the fear in my heart to let me know it was going to be okay. I asked him if he would show me he was listening to me, that he was hearing me. I needed to know that. And he did. He put many different elements. It seemed like every other day something new would happen. I hadn't run in years. I used to run all the time, and I was so stressed, I remembered the peace of running in the park and looking at God's creation and praying. And so I went to the park after many years and began running. And after 20 years, I'd never seen this. I was running. I came upon a group of women praying. And I thought, how strange. So I stopped, and I stood there. And within a minute, I felt arms around me on both sides. And when they finished praying, they talked to me, and they prayed for me and my family. And I thought, wow, that is so strange. And then I thought, why is it strange? You ask for a sign, is that a sign? You know, it's never happened before. And another thing that happened was I was staying home by myself every night, which I'd never done. And I found some lost CDs that had been lost many years. They were Hallel, if y'all know, kind of like a cappella. So I put these CDs in my car and started listening to them. And the words of these songs became my prayers, talking about the distance that you feel. Sometimes I just didn't feel if I had the strength to overcome the distance. I felt distant at times, but the words wouldn't come in my prayers, and I just didn't know what to say. He also, the comfort from you people here, everybody reaching out to me in any and every way possible, asking to help and just doing things without me even asking. I felt it was such a comfort for me. We even had one doctor before one of his surgeries asked to pray with us, that he knew this was in God's hands and not ours. And I had never heard a doctor, usually they think they're the ones in charge and handling it. We ran into people every day. Every day there was, it just seemed like there was something different that came across my path, and it seemed to continually build me up. And so I guess after they transferred him down to the medical center and we found out we were going to have lungs, and we were trying to wrap that around our brains, and things got bad really fast. And I guess I realized in June that again, he may not make it. And while we were waiting for lungs, it had gotten bad. And but I had come to the realization through all those 3 or 4 months, after all of that time, it was a long time for me, that if something happened to him, I would be okay. And I didn't feel like that in March. And that was a comfort to me, because I felt like God had brought me from a complete state of what I would call weakness to a strength that I would be okay. And so right about the time I reached that point, I got a call that my daughter-in-law passed away suddenly, just very quickly. And so once again, I'm like, I just didn't know what to think. I'm sorry, I'm all over the place. But I remember they told me not to leave Jerry because he might not be there. But I knew I had to go be there for my son. And I was on the way home, and one of the songs, you know, you were talking about God holding us. And one of the words to one of the songs was, when the Father reaches down and he holds us in his arms, his words so gently spoken fill our soul. He says, child, I owe it. I understand, and my work is plain to see. Just open up your eyes and be with me. And when I heard that song, I just looked up to God and I said, would you do that? Would you hold me? Now, my prayers, ladies, weren't always on my knees. They weren't in my closet. They weren't in my room. They were driving down the road a lot of times. And when I asked him that, I just felt this warmth come over me. It was something I needed very much at the time. And I really felt like God was holding me. I felt like he had already carried me through the first part. But it was the most unbelievable, comforting feeling of being held. So that became a prayer throughout the rest of the time during this experience. And I still ask him to do that today sometimes, to hold me. And it's a very comforting feeling to pray for. So, let's see. There's that other question. So, how did it individually? What was the last question?
So, the last question was, what has your experience taught you about God's personal relationship with you?
Okay. Let me find my note about that one. It's taught me several things. Okay, there it is. It's taught me that I'm not in control. That is my personality, to be in control. I'm a type A personality. And even though I know God's in control, I find myself all the time trying to be in control. But I wasn't. I couldn't fix my husband. I couldn't heal my daughter-in-law. I wasn't in control. It also has taught me that if we ask, he will answer. And I know these things are in the Bible, but when you go through a year like we did, it just kind of means so much more. And I know people get sick, and I know people lose lost ones. We also had a divorce at the beginning of the year, which we've never had in our family. So we had a couple of my children really struggling, and then my husband, and I worried about all of my children after Emily's death. And I just... I don't know. His plan... his plan is not our plan, but his plan is great, and it's helped me to realize that whether we live to be 32 like Emily or 102, it's such a short time on this earth, and the place that is ahead of us is so much greater and going to be so much better, that God will help us through the physical things on this earth that may be seem so great to us, but in reality, they're really not. And sometimes I have to tell myself over and over and over again that, remind myself over and over again about that, that my hope is in God's plan and where I'm going, and not in the physical things on this earth. Not that I don't mourn my daughter, or I wasn't scared about my husband, and still scared about his recovery and those types of things, but I'm more at peace with that. It taught me to be more compassionate towards others. I had never lost anybody close to me. And it's easy to go up to someone and say, I'm sorry for your loss. Once you've actually been through something like that, I don't know, it just makes me a lot more compassionate. And I'm thankful for that, to be more aware of other people's problems and more proactive in service to God. the biggest thing, though, that I want to share with y'all, I can say last year was a blessing, that I'm the type of person that never felt worthy of God's grace. Because I couldn't be perfect. That's my personality. And it was never very peaceful to me because I couldn't feel that grace. And I really wanted to. I read it. I saw it. I believed it. I just couldn't feel it. And when all of this was over, it's such a blessing to be able to feel worthy of Him. And I don't know how this all came about with what we went through, but it did. And it's such, I feel so blessed that I can live my life now not having to think, if the Lord comes and I haven't been perfect, that's where God's grace is. And it is for me like it is for everybody else. And that's what that means so very much to me.
Good?
I think so.
Okay. All right. So one of the things that I wanted to share, and y'all, I'm sorry because we're about 15 minutes over, but I wanted Kathleen to be able to tell her story. Because that's the family I thought about when I read this chapter. Because God can seem to be a distant being, but He's our Father, and we need to be connected to Him, and He wants us to be connected to Him. So we're going to close it out, and I'm just going to tell you this. There's a song in the back of the folder, and it's called He Knows My Name, and that was my plan B in case Kathleen didn't want to come talk. We were going to listen to that song, so I'm glad that she did. But the words of the song are there, and I never thought about this before, but that song pretty much is Psalms 139, if you think about it. So this is what I'm going to invite you to do. This is your homework. By the time you go home and come back tomorrow, this is your homework. I want you to go to YouTube, and I want you to Google, He Knows My Name a cappella. And then I want you to listen to it. And I want you to listen to the words, and I want you to think about what we studied in Psalms 139. Okay? All right, so we're going to be back tomorrow morning. We're going to close it out with a prayer first, so I'm going to let Alicia Brown start making her way down here. We are going to be back here at 9 o'clock. We're going to sing for just about 15 minutes, and then we're going to finish talking about the characteristics of God. We're going to talk about how He's faithful and forgiving. We're going to talk about how God is our refuge, and we're going to talk about how God keeps His promises.
Yeah, Kathleen, I've got the same problem you do, getting up in front of people. So, and I was in drama. I mean, come on. But that was my biggest thing, was just getting out there on the stage. But I never was me. So here I am. Can everybody hear me like this? All right. Let us bow. Dear God, we thank You for this time that we've had to come together today. Thank You for giving Lana the ability and the willingness to come and talk to us tonight. Thank You for giving Kathleen the courage to come forth and talk to us about their struggles over the past year. Help us to remember that You are always with us, that You're on our side, that You've known us before we were born, and help us to find comfort in that no matter what we're going through, what struggles we may have. Help us to take these things with us tonight and ponder them and come back again tomorrow ready to study more about the Psalms. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen.